Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Welcome to the Psycho Vertical Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Kirkpatrick. I apologise, it's been a bit slack on the old podcasting of late. I don't even know what day it is at the moment. I thought it was Friday today, but I think it's Tuesday. I don't know why I've not been in the podcasting frame of mind, but just not really. Today I thought I've got an hour, so I had a question from somebody from Germany, from Niall. It's not really a German name. Maybe he's a nihilist. Do you have to be German to be nihilist? I'm not sure. Anyway, so this is his question. He sent me an email saying that I should do more podcasts like the one where I was driving, where I nearly crashed a car several times. Maybe he wants to kill me. Anyway, but then he goes on to say, would you please talk about belaying? I'm a German Alpine Club instructor and teach kids how to belay. Bringing any person up to a good standard isn't easy, I have noticed. It takes mileage and a learning with a thick skin. I'd love to hear your thoughts about aspects which are knowing where to stand and how to move at each stage during a pitch, being aware of your weight vis-a-vis the leaders and what that means, knowing when to keep tight and catch hard or give a bit of slack and catch dynamically. What do you and some basic commandments which should not be broken. What about culture? Who does it well? Germans can be poor at it. The French worse. The Irish a bad copy of the Brits. Americans better than most, which is hard to admit. What about devices? What should a beginner be using? A Munter, a Tuber, an ABD? How bad would a partner have to be for you to say, fuck this, clip in, direct, call off belay and abseil and never phone that person again? I noticed that there are not necessarily a correlation between good climbers and good belayers. There's a thread on Mountain Project about Adam Ondra essentially can't hold a gree-gree. I'm guessing that would never be challenged. I guess he would never be challenged on it. A beginner will always assume a strong climber can belay. So quite a bit in there to talk about. So being a belaying instructor must be quite difficult. When they get like little small kids to belay and they have like one kid holding the rope and then they have another kid holding the rope behind them and another kid, so they have like three kids. Always seemed like quite a good technique. I have been climbing I have been climbing, you know, quite a few times with people who are really bad at belaying. And it's you do get kind of, it's one of those things when you're not belaying properly, it doesn't really matter because you know that, you know, they're safe. But when you see somebody else doing exactly the same thing to you, like when you take a photograph, you know, you look, when you're climbing, you look down and the person's basically got the rope in their teeth and they're taking a photograph or they're doing something like that. It's you know, it's different from when you're doing exactly the same thing. So knowing where to stand and how to move each stage during a pitch. So I guess it always depends your location. So like a lot of this is going to be really, really basic stuff for some people, but a really good test if you're taking someone climbing or you're teaching someone to climb, someone to belay, is to if you think you trust them, like start climbing up and then pull the rope as hard as you can to see what they do. So you imagine you're tied in, they're belaying you, you climb 10 feet up the climb, like an easy climb, you're not going to fall off. Then just get the rope and give it the most massive tug as hard as you can. Now, what you'll find is some people will let go of the rope because they get shock. You know, some people will they'll be yanked off balance and they'll fall forward and they'll put both their hands out to stop themselves from like face planting into the rock. You know, so some people will hold on, you know, and some people will just, the rope isn't holding, they're not holding on to the rope in the right way and it'll like whip out of their hands. So that's a good sort of test. Like I've seen a lot of people basically hit the ground, both in climbing walls and outdoors, where the person who was belaying was like, oh, I didn't think you were going to fall off. Or, you know, you shouldn't really go around belaying someone in a way that isn't actually belaying. It's just sort of, you know, NPC, you know, belaying where you're just pretending, you know, you're just acting like someone belaying, but you're not really. It would be a little bit like having some kind of sentient seatbelt on your car. And the first time you have a crash, you know, you go flying through the window. And the seatbelt was like, oh, I didn't actually think you were going to crash. Like, you've been so safe all these years that I wasn't really actually being a seatbelt. I was just looking like a seatbelt. So it's very important that aspect of belaying is that people understand, like, what the hell they're actually supposed to be doing. Like, you're not just... Like Ella, my daughter's been learning to drive, doing driving lessons. And I said to her, like, the purpose of driving lessons is not to be able to pass your driving test, which is like what I would say 100% of people think the role of a duty of a driving instructor is to teach you how to pass your driving test. So the role of learning to drive is that you don't fucking kill yourself when you're driving a car or kill somebody else, which is probably worse than killing yourself. And so with a lot of things, it's you just really got to sort of focus on what the actual, you know, what the aim is of what you're doing. So so one way to do that, I guess, is to give a demonstration of what it feels like for someone to fall off. And you could do that, ideally the best place to do that is in a climbing wall where you get someone to, you know, take a lead fall in a climbing wall, but work up to that. Like, you know, take some like top rope falls, and so the person feels the what it feels like to hold a fall. Like I've probably held some quite big falls off people, and they're, it's the anxiety and the fear that it's going to be really horrible, which is the thing that. That's probably the worst thing. But when someone actually does fall, it's probably not so bad. It's probably like going parachuting. Like, once your parachute's opened, you realize it wasn't that bad. But the idea of your parachute opening is like probably terrifying. So understanding what it's going to feel like when someone falls off and knowing that the rope isn't going to whiz through your hand as long as you're belaying properly is very important. Now, The Met Rescue, like the RAF Met Rescue. I was talking to someone the other day, like friend Heavy, and they used to get a tyre, like the tyre off a truck. So, you know, like not a tractor tyre, but like, you know, one that's maybe 4 feet, is it 4 feet or three, you know, 3.5 feet, 4 feet sort of tyre, like a big heavy tyre. And they would get someone to do a body belay, and then they would like chuck it off the cliff, and then that person would have to try and stop it. Like they must, I'm assuming they must, because the person would be near the top of the cliff, and they'd throw this tire off. So it was kind of a dynamic, you know, it's like a factor two, like straight onto the, like hopefully it wasn't, but the photograph I've seen, it looks like it was is it factor two? Anyway, yeah, you know, like the worst kind of fall you could have, straight on someone doing a body belay. And I think they stopped it when someone broke their arm. So, but I'm sure it was a very good technique. Like anyone, I would say that the majority of people, if there's a factor two, like I'm really bad at factor falls. I think it's factor two, isn't it? You know, you're 1 meter up, and there's no belay, and you fall 2 meters. Yeah, so factor two. You know, anyone who probably takes a factor two fall is probably not going to be able to hold it in the real world. Like some, maybe you will, but the chances are quite low, because a lot of the belaying systems we're using, you know, these days, like using a belay, like a tube device, is not really going to, it will work, but it's probably not going to be as effective as using some old school thing like a munter hitch or something. Like a gree-gree or a, you know, a device like that is going to, will stop you, but then, you know, like a lot of people will get like pulled upside down and all sorts of bad things will happen. So anyway, so that's a separate thing. But the idea of setting up a system of actually testing what it's like to take a kind of a heavy fall is a good idea. Like I remember I had a friend of mine, Joe Brown, not the Joe Brown, the other Joe Brown, and he wanted to do a route where he knew he was going to take a massive fall. And we went to the Foundry climbing wall, and he went up and he sort of climbed. He didn't clip the bolt under this roof, and he climbed above the roof, and then he didn't clip the next bolt, and then he climbed a bit higher. And then I sort of give him out some slack as well. I really didn't have to give any slack out, but unfortunately I did. And he then like jumped off. And honestly, as he was falling, like all the sound like went out of the whole climbing wall. Everyone suddenly was aware that there was a human being flying through the air. And he literally stopped with his feet like, you know, like a foot off the ground or something. So yeah, stretchy ropes and missing out gear, it's not a good, you know, and giving out loads of slack is not a good idea. So, but it's a, you know, I probably hardly felt it. I probably hardly felt the, you know, the weight of him on me. So I think the German Alpine Club do actually do things like that, but I've never seen anybody else doing it. Like if you're in a, you know, if you're doing a, like learning to transition to climbing on the outdoors, or you're in sort of a climbing club, it'd be a very good thing to do. And this probably leads into another aspect of it, is like where to stand. Now, it depends how heavy you are, but generally always best standing, you know, in line with the rope, the direction of the rope. If you're on good rock and everything else, and because again, you don't want to be pulled into the rock. You know, if you're kind of a normal weight person, you don't need to have generally don't need an upward pulling piece of gear. I tend to, you know, not bother. But you don't want to be like catapulted into the rock like head first, especially if you're not wearing a helmet, or yanked upwards like into a, you know, under a roof or something like you'll see in the sort of diagrams of how not to be there. But the number one thing is not being like pulled forward. But the other thing is, again, it's like, this is like a thing that's kind of well known the longer you've been climbing, is the further you stand away from the crag, the more you're gonna, the rope is gonna go in a direct line from the belay point to the top piece of gear that's taking the weight, which can often mean that all the gear underneath, if it's lots of nuts and not being placed well, they'll all kind of like pull out of the rock because they're kind of being pulled upwards, not downwards. And then, so yeah, I've had a few experiences where I've fallen off and I've like, the belay was standing in the wrong place and nearly all the gear has pulled out. And that's often a very good way of people decking out. You know, they fall and all the gear pulls out, and then when the full weight goes onto the top piece of gear, that gear fails as well, and then the person sort of has no gear underneath them and decks out. So so that's a very important thing about position. And then the other thing is you want to be standing up, and you want to be paying attention to the person belaying. Like, you don't want to be laying on your back, or you don't want to be sitting down if you can avoid it. You want to have a bit of an action pose, because a few reasons. Like, sometimes you may have to take a gear in very, very quickly, and it's quite hard to do that, to take rope in very quickly. It's actually quite hard to do that laying down or standing up. It's not as easy as you think. To break the rule, to break one of the rules, if you're standing up, you can actually run away, you know, run away from the rock. Like, if you have a good upward pulling piece and the rope's running through it, if the person who's climbing is very run out and they fall, then actually you running away and taking in the rope through the upward pulling piece, like at the very beginning, is actually a very good way of stopping someone from hitting the deck. You're not going to be able to do that if you're... I think there's a thing called a Russian belay, which is where you just, one person is pulling on the rope with both hands, so they're not actually belaying, and the other person's like taking the rope in. but I don't know if I've actually seen that demonstrated. I think those people used to do that on really scary slab climbs, like if you're in the Tuolumne Meadows. You know, you might have like a, you might be looking at like a 80 meter fall if you fall off, because there's like no gear in 40 meters. So as you're sliding down, if someone can be like pulling the rope, you know, pulling the rope and somebody else taking it at the same time, you might save yourself a couple of, you know, 20 meters of sliding down the slab. So having an action pose is kind of important. And then if it is run out, you need to not be in a position where you're going to get wiped out by the person falling. You don't want them to hit you. If a human being hits you, they could very easily knock you out or break your brain, you know, break your skull, break your arm, whatever. I know somebody where they're basically on an aid route in Yosemite, and he fell off, and when he basically ripped all the gear out, and then the rope somehow like went over the arm of the belay, and it like bent into his arm and things. So again, like factor two falls out good in any way. So being aware of not being hit by someone who's falling down is a good idea. And that's where, again, like maybe you'd want to place like an upward pulling piece or a cam. So the cam should work in all directions ideally. So you know, so even if to stand off to one side and prepared to like, you know, run or whatever, then you're not going to rip all the gear out. And then the next one is if you've got like loose rock or ice climbing, that then you generally don't want to be directly underneath where the person's climbing. And you want the climber to sort of traverse away from you and not be knocking rocks on you. Because if you knock your belayer out, that's not good. When it comes to belaying, an unconscious belayer, you could probably get stuck if you had like the, you know, I've heard of people like being unconscious and still holding onto the rope, so maybe you'd be all right. But if you had like a gree-gree or something and your belayer was unconscious, you could be like, you know, stuck there. So that kind of on the ground, this is like those kind of things are kind of important when it comes to kind of multi-pitch routes. You are more limited. Like one thing I think it's always important is that you're able to, if you can, you know, reach the belay. Like if you've got a, if you're using like a guide belay device or something, and you've kind of extended yourself away from the belay, and something happens where it's often I can't think of the example now, but you ideally you don't want to be extended too far from the belayer, unless you are actually belaying off your you know, doing like a direct belayer, no, doing an indirect belay off your harness. You know, say there's a tree and it's 10 feet away and you put the rope around the tree and then you trail back towards the edge and you're belaying, that's fine. But if you're doing a direct belay off the tree and then you walk all the way back to the edge and you're pulling the rope through, you know, ideally you want to be in arm's reach of where your belay device is, even if you're doing like that kind of belay. In that kind of situation, you might be better using a munter hitch, like putting trailing the rope up, you know, into a tie munter hitch and then back down to you or something. I don't know why that would be better, but I think it might be better anyway. So you are generally limited, but it's the same thing. Like if you're on a multi pitch route, like where you stand and things, you've always got, it depends how many people you're climbing with. If you're going to be standing there the longest, then you generally want to be the person who's got the best, you know, best place to stand. And you don't want to be somebody who's like afraid to hang on the belay. Like that's probably not good if you don't trust your belay to hang on it. So sometimes you might have to swing out the way. Like if you're using a guide belay device, like an auto-locking sort of auto-assist, kind of, you've got all this language right these days, assisted belaying auto whatever, you it's good to have the belay set up so it's very easy for the next person to climb on. So maybe as you're belaying, you want to like be taking the gear off your rack and sticking it ready, you know, get it all sorted out so it's on, you know, clipped into the belay somewhere, so that as soon as the climber gets there, they can, you know, they can clip in. Like one thing you can do is you can often you can climb when you get to the belay, and then you sort of climb on, and then you place the first piece of gear in, and then you clip one rope, and then you come back down, and then you set all the belay up. And that person can always tie into your ropes, if you know what I mean. So they've got the first piece of gear clipped. So you haven't got the factor two kind of possibility like that, because you've already got the belay underneath you. You know, you've got some gear in the belay, and then you're climbing past it and getting the first piece of gear. And then you're coming back down to the belay, if that makes any sense. Because even if it was like sketchy climbing, you've basically got the belay, you know, very solid gear to protect you, but when it comes to the next person to lead on, they've only got the belay, so they're going to take a factor two onto the belay. So that's a thing. So having your if you've got like a climbing pack, you know, if it's kind of not super great weather, you know, often you'll get to the belay and you'll be hot and sweaty or whatever. Like it's worth getting ready for standing there for quite a long time. You know, you don't want to be like belaying and getting colder and colder and colder, and you don't want to take your hands off the rope and, you know, get your jacket out or whatever. So that's where that's why the auto belay devices are quite good, because you can, the guide devices, so you can have a drink, get something to eat, put your jacket on while you're belaying the, you know, your seconds up the climb, really. Like a thing about factor two falls, a very good technique to understand is, if you don't want to use a munter hitch, so Alpine, what's it called, Italian hitch, yeah, if you don't use an Italian hitch or a munter hitch, is, so a good thing about a munter hitch is that if someone takes a factor two fall, the munter hitch, because it's like you're belaying direct, so all the force comes onto the belayer, but also a munter hitch is just very, very effective in that kind of fall. Like if you just have the rope, so if you had like a Jesus piece is a carabiner or a quick draw, you clip into like one piece of your belayer. If you had like two bolts, you've got a sling and you're attached to the two bolts, you're the belayer, and then the leader's rope goes through one bolt clipped into a quick draw, and then they're climbing up, and say they're 20 feet above you and they fall off and they just fall directly onto the belayer, they're not falling directly onto your harness, they're falling directly onto the Jesus piece. But what will happen is that just acts like a acts a pulley, and it'll just yank you up into the Jesus piece, and maybe you'll let go. So a better alternative is to clip in ideally you want like an HMS style carabiner. You put in a munter hitch into the carabiner clipped into one piece of gear. Now the munter hitch, you can either just use the munter hitch as it's like that, and you're just paying the rope through the munter hitch. It's worth having some. Like, you don't need leather gloves, but it's kind of good for your confidence to have some kind of leather gloves for that kind of thing. But you don't need it. But it's just if you've not done a munter hitch before, it's kind of good. But a lot of people don't really trust munter hitches, even though they should. But what you can do, you can actually just put the rope through your belay device on your harness, like you're belaying someone traditionally, and then the rope goes through the munter hitch. So it means that if the person does take a fall, they'll just be held completely on that piece. Now, obviously, if you were on some sort of dodgy pitch, then you might not want to do that if the belay is not very good. But if you've got like a really solid piece, then that makes it works very, very well. And I often, if you can just pay the rope out properly and the person doesn't pull the rope too tight, then the rope, you should be able to feed the rope through the munter hitch. So if you're belaying with your right hand, your left hand is pushing the slack rope up through the munter hitch as the other person is pulling the rope, you know, through the knot. But something it takes some practice. Or you can just push the rope through your belay device and pull it through on the opposite side of the munter hitch. You'll have to practice it to see what I'm talking about. But it's a very good technique. So if someone does fall off, the munter hitch will just hold them, and you probably won't even really feel it in your hands. Where the alternative of trying to belay someone through a Jesus piece, or you know, it falling directly onto your belay device is you just got to visualize that you're holding the belay device, and the rope is going to go, you know, it's going to go from 12 o'clock to like 6 o'clock, and it's going to really, you know, it's going to create a lot of kind of weird forces on your belay and your belay device and your harness, your belay loop and everything else. So, being aware of your weight vis-a-vis the leaders and what that means. So the munter hitch thing is a good way of dealing with the weight difference between two climbers. Like if you're, say you're a child and you're belaying your parent, then I was going to say your dad then, that's being sexist, you know, women, anyway. So that again is a good technique. So if you were belaying, say, at the crag or whatever, you would try and maybe create like a belay point that's kind of fixed. Say you've got a crack, you could try and create a belay point where the belay device is actually clipped in direct into that belay point, not onto the harness at all, and the lighter person is just bringing the rope through the munter hitch, which is very common in Germany, munter hitch, to do that kind of thing. Like people will often, you often see people will have a, you know, they'll have a boulder and the sling will be around the boulder and the munter hitch is like at their feet and they're just pulling the rope through as they're climbing. But you just got to play around with it and just build up your confidence of how good it is. You can get that device if you're climbing in climbing walls and on bolted climbs that takes, it's a bit like a cleat, I think, and it just takes some of the weight if the leader falls off, if someone's very, very light. But I've never actually used one, but I'm sure it's kind of effective. Otherwise, even if you attach the person to the ground, you just have to do it well. Like you don't want to create a situation where the person ends up again like being catapulted into the you know, into the rock. I think you just have to be very wary of a big difference between climbers. Like even when you're top roping, you know, I've seen people, one person going down, the person going up in the air, the person's not heavy enough. Knowing when to keep tight and catch hard, or give a bit of slack and catch dynamically. Like I think the dynamic versus tight thing is very, I don't know, in reality, like often the places where you want to give like a dynamic catch, it probably doesn't really happen because it's just, there's a lot going on probably in that, you know. I know like on a big wall, that's where you'd really want to do a dynamic catch, as in, you know, allow the rope to slide through your belay device or whatever device you've got to try and reduce the impact force. Like if you want a good way of imagining impact force is that the piece of gear, whether it's dynamic or non-dynamic, like the fall, say you fall on a piece of, say you take a fall and you're falling onto a wire, like a piece of like 10 mil wire, or you take a fall and you're falling onto an elastic band that's like, that can't break. The amount of force, the force that's going to be applied to the whatever it's attached to, the piece of gear, is exactly the same, but it's the amount of time it has to absorb that force. So with a piece of wire, the force would be, you know, say like say like 10 kilonewtons of force has to be absorbed by this piece of protection, but the piece of protection has only got a strength of 10 kilonewtons, say, so the force would be transmitted immediately, so that piece of gear would have to absorb, would be asked to hold 10 kilonewtons of force, impact force, in that instant, and therefore it would probably fail. Where when you fall on the elastic band, it still has to absorb 10 kilonewtons of force, but the force is spread over maybe like, you know, 2 seconds, so the actual peak force is much lower. So it might only ever reach, say, 5 kilonewtons of force onto the thing. But the weight, that it has to hold the same amount of weight, but it has longer to do it. So the idea is that if someone is falling onto an RP0 on a slab and they're sliding down into it, is the person who's belaying would just allow lots and lots of rope to sort of slide through the belay device and therefore, you know, stop the gear from failing. But I think mostly when people are belaying, they just tend to just instinctively just lock the belay device off, and they don't, you know, you'd have to really be a really great belayer, I think, really, really good at it, and do a lot of practicing beforehand. And you need like leather gloves, you need like a really good belay device, like maybe you'd even have a non-belaying device, maybe you'd have a figure eight or some other kind of, maybe do a body belay. Like a body belay is dynamic because you can only hold so much force with your body, so it means that the rope is going to pull through around your body, and then it will, you know, that's why in winter climbing they often say to do a body belay if someone's you're just sitting in the snow and you haven't got a belay at all, then you might be able to stop someone dynamically. But generally the story is always that, you know, someone falls and you start doing a dynamic body belay, and the person is just going faster and faster, and then eventually you run out of rope and then you just get yanked off and you both go down together. So it's a nice idea, but I don't know if it would actually work. Like if you're on a Scottish gully or somewhere and there's like spindrift like pouring down your head and you can't see anything, and your friend falls off, like you just have to hope the person's doing any kind of belaying. You know, they might not even be holding onto the rope at that point. But it's a nice idea. So it'd be worth practicing. If you say had a day with this car tire throwing off a cliff or off a tree or something, it'd be worth playing around and see how good it was. What What are some of your basic commandments that should be broken when belaying? I guess the obvious one is don't take your hands off the rope. Don't know if you actually. I think I do try and follow that. Like sometimes you might like end up having the hand, like the rope, you know, wrapped around your leg or something. But you know, when you're taking photographs or something, you might sort of not be holding it in the perfect position, but you are still kind of holding on to it. And if you can't hold on to it, then you need to know how to tie off your belay device. And I wouldn't you just tying a figure of eight in it isn't probably good enough most of the time. You want to learn how to do it properly. What's not called a donkey hitch? What's it called? Anyway, well, you need to learn how to tie your belay device off. My brain's too tired to think of what it's called. Other commandments. I think pay attention. That's probably one of the main commandments. Like, it's very one of the worst things. I know I do it myself. Is when you're like, I guess if you're climbing the climbing wall, you should really focus on the person who's climbing. Now, I don't follow this rule myself, but it is distracting when you're climbing and you're kind of a bit afraid. You think you might fall off, and the person is not really concentrating on you. They're just like having a talk to somebody else. It's kind of, I suppose it's not very respectful, is it? Because that person, you know, if they like give you their 100% attention and they're, you know, they're there for you, dude. You know, then if it's a bit like disrespectful, like they don't even give you the same in return, and it's like, oh, I'm just bored. I just got to belay this person, and it's my turn. So I guess that's not a commandment, but I think that's something always worth thinking about, especially if some people don't mind other people talking, but other people do, and it sort of puts them off. They want to feel like, you know, you're just like standing there on a ledge, and it's like a sunny day, and you're having some crack with the people, not literally crack, but you're having a laugh with the people on the ledge, where, you know, the person who's leading, they're up there, and they're like, you know, fighting for their lives, and that's not very good. Like people are really obsessed about not standing on your rope, but I don't think standing on your rope's that big a deal, really, unless it's really muddy. You know, if you're on a nice ledge, it doesn't really. I don't think it really matters that much. Like, you don't want to be getting muck into your rope; it's gonna, you know, wear it out. But I'm not that bothered about people standing on my ropes as long as it's dry and it's like I heard of somebody once getting punched in the face for standing on someone's rope. So yeah, I guess it's someone I once guided somebody. He had this story that he had a guide who was teaching him to, I think it was in Yosemite, like a Yosemite mountain guide, and he was being taught how to lead, and the guide had sort of set him up on a top rope. And the idea was he was climbing, and he had a rope clipped into him. He was placing gear and clipping the rope into the gear as he was going up. And the guide was like standing there belaying him, so he was safe. And then like giving him advice and watching. But anyway, this guy was incredibly slow, and you know the guide went from like standing up watching him, and then he was kind of then sitting. Then he was sitting down watching him. And then he was lying down watching him. And then he sort of moved over to the trees where there's some shade. And he was lying under the shade of the trees watching him. And the guy was like on this pitch for hours and hours and hours. And then he was quite near the top. And suddenly he fell. Instead of the rope holding him, he was like flying down the rock face. And suddenly the rope like twanged tight. And he looked around. And the guy had actually tied the rope off to a tree. He wasn't even belaying him anymore. And he sort of jumped up like he was asleep, and he was like, "Hey, dude, that was your first leader fall or something." So yes, that's probably not good. I have actually a few occasions I've been belaying someone, and I fell asleep. But I had a gree-gree, so it didn't really matter. Like, if you got a gree-gree, you know, you can, if someone's taking a very long time to lead a pitch, like if you're on a big wall and the sun's beating down on you, it can be quite easy to fall asleep. So that's, maybe some falling asleep is. Should be one of the commandments. Don't fall asleep when you're belaying somebody, and don't drop people unintentionally. Like, I have this joke, this story about climbing mermoz in Patagonia, like doing like a winter ascent of mermoz, and doing this it was all kind of mixed climbing, apart from this one bit where there was like some aid climbing. And I was aiding up this, I started going up one way, up an off-width crack, and I couldn't do it that way. So I think I ended up like swinging, putting some gearing and swinging across to another crack. And then I started going up that crack and I was like leapfrogging some gear until I was high enough that I wouldn't have this like dog leg from the rope. And then I started leading. I had two ropes, and I had like a thick rope and a thin rope. And I think I'd pendulumed on the thin rope, and then I was like, then I started clipping the thick rope in. Anyway, I was quite high, and I put a peg in. I was standing on this peg, and I could feel it might pull out. And while I was standing on it, it did pull out. And instead of just falling onto the next piece of gear, I ended up falling like quite a long way. And then eventually I stopped. And Ian, who was belaying me, I was like, take me on the green rope or something. He was like, green rope? I thought you were climbing on the red rope. And basically he was like holding on to just one of the ropes because he thought that was the rope I was climbing on, but I was on both ropes. So dropping people, it's going to happen, but it's just kind of limit it as much as you can. What about culture? Who does it well? Germans can be poor at it, the French worse, the Irish a bad copy of the Brits, Americans better than the most. Americans are good at belaying. They have, I don't know why, but they can be quite formal about it. They're very good at communicating. Like, there must be quite a good system of people being taught by mountain guides and instructors and people on how to climb. Because there is definitely, you do see some terrible belaying, but there is probably a lot less terrible belaying in America than there is like in France and things. Like, I think this is a terrible, gross, you know, it's not very nice to say this, but, and it's probably not true anymore. But in the past, I did often notice that, say, French and Italian climbers, they often seem very sketchy. And I think it probably came from climbing in the Alps, where sketchiness is probably quite a handy thing to do, and for as long as it lasts. But, you know, but they would just belay off like a single peg, you know, be like a fixed peg, and they would just, you know, belay off that without nothing else. Or they would just do things that you wouldn't necessarily do, really. I think British climbers have a weird mixture, because, you know, you come from a tradition where climbers are falling off. So a lot of people aren't really, you know, if you fall off and your partner holds you, it's probably more luck rather than, you know, but rather than the design. So Germans, yeah, I think Germans often, they have techniques which look a bit strange sometimes, but, you know, they have this, it seems, again, comes from this more of an Alpine sort of thing, where I think British climbers came from more from maybe climbing in the UK, like climbing, you know, in Wales and that kind of thing. It's very hard to think. But I think I think Americans are quite like, especially, you know, like if you're someone who's been climbing in like the Sierra and Yosemite, and like America's got so much amazing rock, like Red Rocks, all these kind of places. It does develop very, very good cragmanship skills, like very good communication, speed. I would say probably better than Alpine climbing does, because often you're doing, you know, very long routes with like long approaches, and you're trying to get them done in a day. And it just creates very efficient climbers. And also you're getting in a lot of mileage, where if you're climbing in the Alps, you have a lot of crappy weather, so you're not climbing as much. Like if you go over to Tuolumne Meadows or the Sierra, High Sierras, you could be climbing every single day, and you might be doing like, you know, 15 pitch routes, and just getting so much climbing done. And, you know, long routes, you know, 40-meter pitches, 50-meter pitches, you're going to have to be very good at communicating. And if you're doing a lot of abseils down and, you know, general crag kind of navigation, you get very good at it. I think that's one reason why Americans are good. Like Canadian climbers are good, but they're maybe a little bit more like Brits, really, because they've got a lot more, I think they've got a lot more crappy weather and crappy rock. So they're a bit more, you know, they're all descended from Scots climbers and, you know, those kind of people. So yeah, I think it's the cult. I think the culture can change. You definitely have a lot more climbers who are coming out, and I've been saying this for like 20 years, 30 years, but a lot of climbers who are coming out of climbing walls, so they've never, you know, done any trad climbing, and they've never done any like long multi-pitch routes. So it's like a steep, learning curve, learning to do with all those kind of things. So yes, it's hard to know how to model yourself on it. I think just model yourself on the ideal. You know, you want to basically be like a mountain guide. You know, you want that kind of. You want to be efficient. You want to be safe. You don't want to kill anyone. You don't want anyone to kill you. You want to be knowledgeable. You want to have lots of skills in your toolkit of what you know how to deal with problems. And you don't. You just want to avoid dramas, basically. I think the more skills you have, the less dramas you have. Like I noticed, you know, when I went off like climbing for 2 years, and just basically rock climbing for 2 years when I went off to like Africa and Australia and places. And you know, when you climb every day, you basically nothing ever happens. You just go climbing. Where before, because I used to have like big gaps between going climbing, and then when I went climbing, I'd be doing something sort of gnarly. You know, I'd always get into epics. So it just wasn't up to speed really. So yeah, it's all about the getting the mileage in. So what about devices? What should a beginner be using? So I think it's best to start with a standard belay device, like a guide belay device, and learn how to belay that way, and then learn how to, you know, set up a, you know, direct belaying, indirect belaying, tying off your belay device, lowering people on your belay device. So belaying isn't, you know, belaying isn't just belaying the leader or, you know, belaying the leader up, or, you know, you have to learn how to lower people and do it. You know, it's much more complicated than you think belaying to do it properly, especially when it comes to setting up trad belays and being safe on multi-pitch routes and stuff. Like, and a lot of people, again, you can do it in a sketchy way, but you really want all your belays to be able to take that factor 2 fall, and you want a belay that you could, you know, lower someone down if you need to. And you know, you really need to understand the differences between using your ropes to set up a belay, or using a cordelette, or using a sling, or using like a natural belay. You know, that you want to be able to use a body belay, you want to be able to use a munter, you want to know when you could use a micro traction to belay somebody up. There's like a lot of skills when it comes to belaying, but I think, you know, you could start by doing a body belay, but you probably do. You know, if you're going to be doing climb where people are going to be falling off all the time, that's not a good idea. So you want to learn to use like a tube belay device, and really, really, really feel comfortable with it. And then you want to then progress onto using like an assisted belay device, like a Grigri or something like that, and learn how to use that properly. And then learn how to use a munter hitch. Like you could put the munter hitch first. But I'll probably do it in that order, and learn so you feel confident that you can hold someone's fall in with any of those things. And I guess a lot of them, there's a lot of like wacky belay devices on the market, but I'd probably start with something, you know, something like mainstream, like the Petzl, you know, reverse or whatever it is. You know, you use something like that, like a Black Diamond, whatever. Like the first time I ever used the Black Diamond, what's it called? Air controller. What's it called? Traffic forest. Air traffic controller. Whatever it's called. I can't remember what it's called now. Anyway, one of those ATC. First time I ever used an ATC. The first time someone fell off, I almost hit the ground, because I never used one of those before. I'd only used like a stitch plate, like a sprung stitch plate. Then were the days, and which was very, you know, it would like really lock off really, really easily. So yes, that was it's good to know how these things work. But they don't all work the same, that's for sure. So how bad would a partner have to be for you to say fuck this clip in direct? Anyway, how bad would they have to be? Well, to be honest, I have climbed with some pretty bad belayers. Like I've climbed people who literally have never belayed in their lives. Don't know how to, like when there's a store when I was climbing Ulvatana, I was climbing with several people who really weren't climbers at all, who were base jumpers. And they all had a gree-gree. So the idea was, the gree-gree, like hopefully I wasn't going to be falling off. But if I did fall off, then the gree-gree should work. So those two things together meant I shouldn't die if I did fall off. But one of them, he dropped his gree-gree. So the only, for some reason, I just showed him how to use a munter hitch, I think. And he ended up leading a pitch. Up on this ridge, and then he got to the belay, and then he was belaying me over, and I had to step across a big gap. It was like a big chimney, and I had like a hole bag on my back, and as I was pulling myself across the other side, both the holes just broke off because the rock was very crappy, and I just kind of fell down this chimney, and luckily I landed on my back on a snow mushroom. I must have only fallen like five feet or something. Landed on a snow mushroom. And I was kind of winded, but I got up and I managed to climb back up. And when I got to him, I didn't really say anything. But then I was just getting ready to lead the next pitch. And then I was just kind of like, oh, by the way, I nearly fell down there. And he said that basically he didn't really understand how a munter hitch works. And he wasn't actually holding on to it at the time. I think he just thought that if the rope went tight, it would just lock the nut, like a clove hitch. But that didn't happen. It just didn't work. But I have countless times of being with someone who literally people had never belayed before. Like I climbed with someone recently where I said, "Have you got a belay device?" And he said, "I got two." And he looked down, and one was a pulley, and one was a belay device. I was thinking, I don't think you know what a belay device is. But we still went climbing. So sometimes you are climbing with people where you know that you are basically soloing. It's probably how mountain guides often do this, where they know they're just soloing up something and they just hope they don't fall off, which is probably not a good idea. It's not a good idea. You really, it's like someone packing your parachute you've never met before and has never packed a parachute. It's probably not a good idea to go parachuting with that person. Pack your own parachute or take somebody else who knows how to. Climbing as a three is probably a good idea. You can keep an eye on it. And if worst comes to it, if there's two people who can't belay, then one of them can hold the rope and the other one can like belay. So hopefully that will work. So yeah. I noticed that there was not necessarily a correlation between good climbers and good belayers. No, that is definitely true. Like, I would say, I think, I don't know if I've ever said it, but I think Alex Honnold is actually quite dangerous. I think he's a very dangerous influence on climbers, because he just, I don't know if it's like performative, or if it's just, if it's not, I don't know, but I think often he sets kind of a bad example. I set many bad examples myself, but just very slack, whether he's belaying someone or someone's belaying him. And so it's kind of part of the culture, isn't it, really, to not really take these things that seriously. But I think a lot of people are often looking on who might think that's fine, for someone to be like belaying, the ropes coming out of the belay device into a big pile of rope on the ground and up to the person who's climbing. Like, it's kind of funny, but it's not so funny when you fall off. A lot of people have probably gone their whole lives without ever really being that good at belaying, but no one's ever going to point it out for them. And generally you always kind of get away with it. But it is worth recognizing your own failings, really, the things you don't really know. But you do have to know something to begin with to know what you don't know. So it's So yeah, so that often don't look at other people and think that, oh, well, he does it that way, that must be the right way to do it. Like, just try and work out what yourself, what's, you know, what's kind of safe. And I'm sure, like, I remember when I was in Yosemite when Adam Ondra was doing, when he was repeating the Dawn Wall, like he was like climbing up the first 10 pitches with a Grigri and a Jumar, which is the last way you want to do that. Like, that is a really, you've been knackered by the time you got to the top of the thing. But you just didn't know how to Jumar properly with two Jumars and or whatever. So, you know, don't always assume that just so someone's like the greatest climber in the world, he's actually the greatest climber in the world. You know, he might be physically the greatest rock climber in the world, but he might not be the best climber in the world. So, be careful of your heroes, really. There's like many. I've probably got loads of stories about people doing. Like, there was a famous story where I think Stephen Venables, he just climbed Everest. I think he was the first Brit to climb Everest with oxygen, and he came down and he wanted to go. The Blue Peter TV program wanted to climb Ben Nevis with him, and the mountain guide was there to keep an eye on the talent, like the TV presenter. And he said to something like, Stephen, oh, can you just tie an alpine butterfly in the rope for me? And, you know, and Stephen was like, what? I don't know how to do that. As you know, So some people just get on with it and just go climbing, and they don't really know anything. They just know like two knots and that's it. They wouldn't know how to rescue you or rescue themselves, or even they probably know how to tie a prussic loop, but that's probably it. So, yeah, you'd probably be shocked how little, like, you'd be shocked how little I know about stuff. So, or maybe you wouldn't be shocked, but it's just, I guess it's the more you do it, the more you use it, the more the more it's like ingrained into your brain. Like, if you want to know about changing nappies, you know, I'm pretty good at that. But yeah, I can't even remember the name of an ATC, so it shows I've not been climbing much recently. So yeah, I guess that's a rundown on belaying. Any other belaying related things? If you're doing a multi-pitch route, I would always carry a spare belay device. I'd also try and learn how to belay if you've only got one arm. So if you want to belay with one arm, there's various ways of doing it. So say you broke your arm and you have to belay the other person to climb out. Like, how would you do it with one arm? So that's a little, just even work that out. you know, if someone was, you need to be able to create like an auto belaying device in an emergency. Say if you had heat stroke and again you're belaying your buddy who's gonna try and get out there and save you, like, can you set up a belay device that you can belay with, ideally with one arm, that will lock off if you fall asleep or if you like go unconscious? Like, that's another, is lots of little things. Yeah, I guess it's like you need to know how to release the tension on a loaded guide plate, like if someone's hanging underneath you or whatever. Like, once I did a route in Tuolumne Meadows and there was a couple just behind us, and there was a roof, you had to climb over a roof to get to the belay, and the wife was just underneath this roof, and we were on the same belay, and we kept on going, and basically she fell off, and he was on a guide belay device, and we climbed maybe 5 pitches and got to the summit and then came all the way back down, and when we were walking along the bottom, she was still hanging on the rope because basically she'd swung out into space on a guide belay device, and he didn't know how to remedy the situation. So he didn't know, I think he was too afraid to touch anything because he was afraid that the rope might come out of the thing. So so if you imagine that kind of situation, what would you do? You need to sort of run through a lot of these scenarios in your head, so you've got some idea like what you would do if that was you. But yeah, remember, it's like a tool, it's a belay device. It's got loads of different ways of using it. So just like a knot, just spend the time of trying to work out lots of things. Like my down book has got a lot of stuff in there about lowering on a belay device. I need to do a book about belaying probably, but there's that's got a lot of stuff about lowering, so that's very, very useful. And an upselling, you know, remember Bela device, it's like it's an upsell device as well. So it's some of the stuff that you use for upselling, it crosses over into, you know, into Belaying as well. So it's all good. So I guess I need to go and make spaghetti bolognese now. So I shall sign off, and I shall do another podcast soon. I've just seen a question come in about midweight Belay jackets. It never ends. It's a never ending smorgasbord of amazing questions. So you got any questions, send them in. And until next time, stay safe.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.